Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to episode 30 of the DesignFootball.com podcast. My name is Jay. I am the resident blogger on DesignFootball.com. For this episode, I'm joined by Angelo Trofa, a designer who a lot of people listening to this will be aware of the work of. Hi, Angelo. How are you?
Hey, how's it going, Jay? I'm good, thank you. Yourself?
Yep. Not too bad. Okay, so going straight into it, people would have become aware of your work either through uploads to designfootball.com, and on there you are Amadeus Angelillo. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Where did that name come from?
That must be 10 years old, and I think that's the first time I've ever heard someone say it, say it out loud. It's quite funny. Well,
I remember because I was like, for a long, long time, because I remember when I started, when designfootball.com started, and it was like, I was aware of various things and you were popping up on different websites or on, I don't know if Twitter was so big back then, but various places your work was being spotted. And I was like, that looks similar to this guy we've got on our website, Amadeus Angelillo. And then you start tying the things together and you go, okay, that's clearly the same person who's just got an alter ego on our website. So was there a reason for the name, or you just wanted anonymity, or what was the thinking behind it?
I don't know. I don't think it's as advanced as wanting anonymity. I think it was, like with MySpace at the time, and you were told that you had to have like a handle and stuff like that. I always used to just think you have to put like a fancy name there. So I think it's literally as simple as that. Like, yes. I must have been 17-ish, 18.
It's pretty fancy.
it also makes you realise how long ago, like, I started using designfootball.com. That's about 10 years ago.
It is sort of the 10th anniversary this year. Big celebrations coming up. We hope that we should be marking it one way or another. Anyway, moving on. So you were posting various things. Now, the designs on the website are great, so you can check those. But when did Volume 1, people will know you through your output on social media, obviously, but they'll know you from the football strip concepts. These are the sort of magazines that you were
making available.
So how did the first one come about? What was the build up to that in your childhood? I take it you were drawing kits when you were a kid as well.
Yeah, always. I think I've been doing it. You can see it in like my kids' sketchbooks when I was a kid. I think it started off with superheroes like redrawing their costumes. But the idea for the first issue, it sort of come about in the end of college, first year of uni, because I was always obsessed with magazines and print books, and I always thought how great it would be to have my own, like, to not to have one about myself, but more to, you know, to be involved in working in one. And I guess the only thing that I had around me at the time was just these kit designs, so I thought, you know, I want to make a magazine, what do I put in it? So naturally it just came about like that, just sticking these designs that I had into a magazine.
Okay, and so what were you doing at college? Because I take it there's some design in your life outside of designing football kits.
Yeah, no, it literally was. It was studying graphic design at college. So it's what I'd always wanted to do, like design logos and posters and that kind of stuff. So I guess football kind of brings all of the elements of graphic design together. So it's kind of like fashion, advertising, branding, logo design, typography, all in one.
Okay. So starting at volume one, the human form is, I mean, it's maybe a developer thing as well. So if you're working for Nike or Adidas or whatever, then developers will look at the human form and they'll work out how best to dress that in terms of where the stitches are and where bits should be stretching. Your work seems to have a lot of that, even from the beginning. So was that a particular interest of yours, physiology and things like that of the human body?
I think so. I mentioned a second ago, like superheroes were always a thing that I was always interested in. And if you look at, you know, the way superheroes are drawn in comic books and stuff, they're quite muscular, they're quite anatomical. So like the attention to the human anatomy and form is quite evident. And I guess at the time, I also was well into what Aitor Fruit was doing. And he ended up working with Umbro on the England kits. And everything that he did was about how the human form and the anatomy interacts with like the clothing that it's wearing. So I guess it definitely, yeah, that's what I was interested in at the time.
Yeah.
And definitely informs it.
Yeah, Aitor Fruit was heavily involved in the sort of tailored buy range, particularly the 2010 England away kit. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, so he came from a fashion background, I believe, and then moved into the sportswear and football kit specifically via Umbro there. So what I remember is your first involvement on designfootball.com was the Poland Nike competition, which was like the first, it was just like a fun competition I think we had, but it had so many entries, and that's what really built up the website originally, and you got involved in that, and a lot of your designs were picked up quite well from that. But there were a lot of features that you had, and I think you probably featured this in the Poland competition with the Nike socks, and I'm still surprised that they've never really done that, have they? Is it the back of the boots or something, that Nike logo where it's like the word mark, and you put that on the back of the socks, didn't you?
Yeah. So it's like the Nike font that they had in the 90s.
I was
just looking for something to like accentuate the calf muscle, because I guess that's quite a strong area like in an athlete. So I was just looking for something to stick there to make it, you know, accentuate it, draw attention to it, and I guess that naturally felt like it fitted there.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't really thought of it that way. I remember looking at it thinking that looks brilliant and they should really do that, but if you look at what they've done over the last few years, they've definitely been focusing on that area in the sock design. So they've been putting kind of chevrons on the back of the sock and just something just like large at the top and then gradually getting smaller as it goes down. So that's it, sort of in keeping with what you did.
Totally.
The Nike word mark.
Yeah. Also, another thing that, I mean, this is volume one. So we've got like five volumes that you've done now. Volume one, what year was this came out as well?
I'm not sure. It was kind of like the back end of 2009, I think, 2010.
Yeah. That sounds about right. You did the Umbro, like logo, you did like an England kit or something, or an Umbro kit of some description, like long sleeved, and it had like the Umbro diamonds as the elbow pads.
Yeah,
have they never done that? That seems really obvious. I don't know if they've ever done it in maybe in a goalkeeper kit or something, but that's a really good idea.
I'm glad you still I think that was, yeah, it's about 8 years old, mate. Maybe it's too obvious, I'm not sure, but that idea was pretty much borrowed from what Aitor Fruit was doing at the time with Umbro, where he was experimenting with stretchy fabrics. And, you know, looking at the way the body moves and the arm moves, it kind of feels like natural to place something at the elbow to aid articulation or something. And what better thing to put there than the diamond of Umbro if you're designing an Umbro kit?
Yeah, sorry. If I was saying it was obvious, it's easy for me to say it's obvious while when someone else has thought of it.
So what? It clearly
it wasn't obvious because no one did it apparently until you came along and did it.
Well, I did it in drawing in a magazine. I didn't really bring it to life. Yeah. It might not work.
We'll get to that later because some things do come to life. All right, so that's volume one, which was pretty impressive, and this was pretty popular. There were a lot of people who picked up this what you created, and that was great. The volume two, one of the standout features on volume two is that you did, I think it was Brazil kits, and you put the Nike logo onto a pocket, like the swoosh logo was on a pocket on the chest. Yeah. Now I'm just thinking about the dates on this because Adidas ended up doing this, didn't they?
Yeah, they ended up doing about 2 or 3 years later. Was it for Marseille, maybe?
Yeah, Marseille had it. At some stage, Milan had it as well, I think.
Yeah, that's right. It was like an away or a third kit Milan had it, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. How do you react to something like that? Is that... Do you think it's linked? Do you think they've seen your work? Or do you think it's a subconscious thing where they think they've created it themselves, but they've actually seen your work without remembering they've seen your work? Or are you insulted? How does it actually work when you see something like that? Does it make you think that you should be in their position or what?
I don't know. I think sometimes it's like easy to get carried away with like ego and think that somebody is just like ripped you off. Mm. Especially like, because I know that idea obviously come from somewhere originally, because I was looking a lot at like designs from the 30s and the 40s, and especially in South America at the time they had the pockets on the jersey, so it come from, you know, my idea, you know, it's not totally 100% original. I think the only thing that you can think is, I decided to put that down and publish it first kind of thing. It might be some like smug thing like that, but I think it's quite easy to get caught up and start thinking that people ripped you off when, you know, essentially, especially within football, if you start looking into it, try and find something new, often means going into like the history books and pulling out small details. So often you'll find that people are looking at the same things at different times, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so your research sort of overlap with people who are doing similar things.
Yeah, that's interesting. But like you said,
you can take a certain amount of pride in the fact that you got there first, really. And I do think that when you've done something like that and people will see it and go, actually, that works. That can sort of be a vindication of a thought process. So, okay, I wasn't going to be brave enough to do that, but this guy's done it and that looks pretty cool. So, yeah, let's go ahead and try it. Again, it could be a subconscious thing, but...
Yeah. And sorry to interrupt, but I know that, I don't know, as the years have gone by, I've like worked with people within the industry and stuff, and you start realizing that these people do put together mood boards and they pull references from certain places, so ideas do come from people that, you know, are doing these things as concepts or for fun or like, I'm sure they definitely look at what people are doing on designfootball.com and places like that for reference, because it's good to keep an eye on what's going on at that kind of level.
Yeah. I'll talk up the talents of people who are members of Design Football, but I suppose they're also consumers. So if they're designing something that they like and they think looks good, then the idea could be that if they're creating that, then maybe they'd buy it as well. So if we create something similar, it might be a winner.
100%.
In volume three, just for my reference, now you don't need to give this away if you don't want to, but you obviously made these available in various forms. So there was a hard copy of each of these editions of your concepts. Which one was the most popular, out of interest, do you know?
Obviously, the third one was the one that started getting publicity and stuff, it was getting spoken about the most online, I think. There was that that weekly publication, Sport, that was given away on the Tube for free.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it was on page two, they wrote a full-page article all about the project. So obviously, each one has been more popular than the last because people already know about it.
Yeah.
But I think that the third one was the first one where it kind of, I don't know how, it got me like a certain level of exposure. So I guess that was the most successful one, as that's the one that grabbed people's attentions.
Yeah. But well, I mean, there's a reason why I asked that question at that point, because this was the one that had the most impact for me, I think. Because I don't know if it's as simple as liking these designs the most, but they seemed the most adventurous. So you designed a Greece kit, which had like old sort of Greek patterns on it, sort of ancient Greek patterns on it. I don't know what they're actually called, but...
Oh, the Greek key.
So this was there was the neck design, which was like a square neck design, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Did you have like a mixed reaction to that, or was it entirely positive, or what?
I think you're right in saying that if you look at all of them, that one there had the most adventurous designs. I don't think it's a coincidence, because I just started working for an online fashion company at the time, like a year before. So I was exposed to all of like these new stylings for the first time, and looking at clothes in different ways. I think people have always responded positively to it, and that Greek design as well is probably my favorite concept kit that I've ever done, in the sense that it pulls together like harmoniously all the references that I look at the most, and makes it what, and it looks good. I don't know whether it'd be a successful kit, because I'm sure a square collar would be quite uncomfortable, but aesthetically it kind of looks cool. I still think.
Yeah. The other thing with that kit was you put like a flag detail. It's another thing where after you create it, I look at it and go, well, of course you'd do that. And I don't know if Adidas have ever done that, but you put like the Greek cross, the Greek flag cross, into the sock design, into the three stripes on the top of the socks. Now, have Adidas ever done that? That seems an obvious thing to do, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess it does.
But it does now.
Yeah, yeah. It's always that thing as well, though. Brands are often scared to disrupt like their logo marks and stuff. I think that's kind of changed in the last couple of years. But at the time, I don't know, that's really what would get me excited. And yeah, like you say, because if you look at their logo, the Greek Federation logo is built up of stripes and a cross.
Yeah.
So they kind of go together harmoniously with the Adidas stripes. So to me, it kind of felt natural that you'd want to mix the two, because you could represent both, you know, like both Adidas and Greece with the same logo mark, which it'd be amazing to do if you make it work.
Yeah, I saw someone did something like that with a forest design. There's one on the website. I'll put it on the notes of this podcast. So if you're looking at this on Acast or on your phone or whatever, this should pop up now. There's a Nottingham Forest design on the website, which has like a sublimated crest, and they've extended. There's like the River Trent runs at the bottom. It's like a wavy, like water thing, and they've turned it into like the three stripes of Adidas going across the shirt, which is a brilliant idea. But you'd think that they would do that. I understand what you're saying, where they don't want to disrupt their own logos and their own branding, because that's sort of separate, but it'd be nice to tie it in like that more often. And that, what you did with the socks there is just brilliant. But I keep on saying it's obvious. Please forgive me
for that. It's not obvious, because you've done it, and then I've gone, why didn't I think of that?
Stuff like
that
is what gets designers excited.
Yeah. Another thing, which is, you did it before they did it again, is the you did a Spain design, and I look at the Spain design that you did in Volume 3, and that could be like a kit. That could, I look at it and think, well, did they release that? That looks so familiar. And it's because I think that one was it based on the 82 design?
Yeah, that's the one.
And but it's an Adidas one. I think, what did they wear in 82? Did they wear Adidas or
Le Coq Sportif? I think it was Le Coq Sportif.
Okay.
So it's an Adidas version of that. And it just brilliant. And I'm trying to think. I think they did exactly that. So you brought a collar back, and you brought back the black socks, which they hadn't had for a few years. And Adidas have done that since, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, maybe it was for the last World Cup, possibly, or the last Euros. Yeah, they brought back the black socks.
And I think they had like a, I might be getting mixed up on which ones it is now, but I think they had like a faux collar design as well, like, which is
nods.
Yeah, you're totally right. It had like a, definitely. It was inbuilt into the seams of the jersey. So it looked like a wing collar, but it actually wasn't.
Yeah. But that's basically your design there, isn't it? That's the two elements that from the past, from the classic idea of a Spain kit that you brought back, and then Adidas have gone and done it a few years later. So I look at yours and I think, well, that's just a kit that's been released, but it hasn't. It was like 4 or 5 years later after you'd actually done it, which is
pretty good. I guess that's another stroke for the ego, right? Where you think, oh, I got there a few years before.
Yeah, and it follows the same thing where if they look at it, they go, okay, well, that works. Maybe we were considering doing that, and he's demonstrated it. So you're like the sounding board, maybe. So you put stuff out there. Maybe they even check what... I mean, I don't know about you, but various designers, maybe other people messing around, they see what the reaction is to things, and they go, okay, yeah, it's time we actually tried that. But... yeah, it looked great, and it's not surprising that they went down that road afterwards, because
it was brilliant.
I think Spain looked good with black socks. I don't know if it's true, but my friend who's Spanish, she told me that the reason that they got rid of it is because the black socks was linked to Franco, who was a dictator. So,
yeah,
I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, we've discussed it before on various podcasts, whether that is actually true or not. I've heard two things. One, that's not necessarily true. I think we concluded that it wasn't true, but because people kept on saying it, they got rid of the black socks anyway. So that was the thinking behind the change. And the other thing is, I'm sure I read somewhere that when they brought the black socks back, they're actually officially really, really dark navy or something.
Yeah,
so they haven't actually admitted
that.
They're black.
They said it was they were black, but they said it was dark navy. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, we believe you.
one thing that hasn't happened
that I don't really understand why, and I don't know whether this is because from our point of view from afar, it seems like a great idea, but when you're actually from the country itself, it just seems a little bit lame. Again, that sounds like an insult, but it's not, because I'm just wondering why this hasn't happened, because as far as I'm concerned, it should have happened, is the Japan stuff you did. Now, we've seen a lot of people, loads of people do it on Design Football now, but I think you did it before them. It's just like, it's a white shirt, like an away shirt, I suppose. And it's got like the flag's red circle in the middle, the sun, I guess.
Yeah.
And do you put the number inside the circle? Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
See, that's brilliant. And it looks so classy as well. But I suppose it's a flag thing, isn't it? You can't have a kit with a flag on it. Do you think that's the reason?
Possibly. And I guess, you know, Japan are known as the Samurai Blue. It's like their official nickname, but... I don't know. I remember always seeing that flag, and it is. It's one of the most unique flags out there. I think them and Bangladesh are the only countries that just have a circle in the middle. I mean, unless you're going to count like South Korea that have got other embellishments around it.
Yeah.
But it's just such a clean flag. It's just white with a red sun in the center. It kind of, yeah, it's not me that makes it look cool because it already exists, but if the kit was all white with just a red dot in the middle, it looks super, super cool.
Mm. But even if they can't do that because of regulations from FIFA about wearing like your flag on your shirt or whatever, I don't know, you did the anthem jackets as well, which for me look even better. And I don't think I've seen them do that either. And that seems...
It's just a massive red spot on the back.
Yeah. Or on the chest or something. Do something along those lines. So it's... I mean, that you did it with like a Japanese script on the back as well, didn't you, I think?
Yeah. Because I did a series of those Anthem jackets for that issue. Mm. And I guess the idea was... I don't know, in that issue, I was kind of like exploring the themes that, you know, these national teams, they're more like street gangs that you find in like the 50s New York or something. Mm. So it kind of felt like natural to use the Anthem jacket in the same way that the Wanderers had their jacket in the movie, for the 70s movie about the Wanderers, like a street gang. Mm. So you just have like a patch on the back with the name, almost like Hell's Angels style. And so for Japan, just slap a massive red circle on the back and then have the script around it. It kind of sits really nicely.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it definitely works. The other thing you did with that kit, and I feel like I'm going to keep on doing this, but you did the Japan kit had like grey elements as well, so it was like white with grey parts, and they've kind of done that this year, haven't they, with the away kit is sort of done in that style, which works brilliantly again.
Yeah. Have you seen the latest kit for Japan?
Yeah, where it has the stripes coming over the shoulder.
Yeah. Did you like that one? Is that one that you think looks good?
It's all right, but I feel like there's an imbalance with that one because of the... I'm not sure. Like, when I look at it, it kind of doesn't look fully finished for some reason or other. I'm in between. I think the colour combo looks really cool and nice, but as a design, I'm not sure if I like the way the stripes sit on the shoulder.
Okay. Yeah. I think I'm okay with it. I think I quite like things that are imbalanced. If things don't look quite right, I think... Maybe that
works. Maybe that appeals sometimes.
It's like a... if it jars a little bit, then it's maybe a little bit more exciting than something that just looks perfect. But I do like that one. The main thing in Volume 3, and it seemed like... Would you know when Volume 3 was that 2013, was it?
Yeah, it was the end of 2013, the beginning of 2014.
Okay.
So when was the 150th anniversary of the FA? Did those kits get released, the England kits celebrating the 150th anniversary? Were they released before you published this or the designs were made for this?
I think they came out that March, maybe. So okay. Because I remember doing the design in the summer before 20, so it would have been summer 2013.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was a competition on design football, no?
Yeah, that sounds about right. It might have been a year earlier, though, because I think those kits, I have a feeling those kits came out in 2013, because then they released the other one in 2014 for the World Cup.
It's possible because I did the designs just before the anniversary and then used that and put it in my magazine to show the logo that I'd designed. That's what it was.
What did you think of the ones that were released? Because if you can, all of these, everything we're talking about here can be accessed via a website now, can't it? It's available to everyone
to
browse online. What's the website?
There's an online magazine platform called Issue, where it's spelled ISSW. So if you just type in football strip concepts, it will come up.
Mm.
They'll come up.
So when I look through these designs now, even I really like them, but even if I didn't like them, they seem more fitting, far more fitting to the occasion than what Nike actually released. Now, I know that Nike can listen to this and say, okay, you don't know what's involved in making a football kit, and we put all the research in, and we know we have to find out what's going to sell and all these different things. But do you not think an occasion like that required something a little bit more, like what you created yourself? What's the thinking behind them not doing something like that?
Yeah, I think I agree. Yeah, I totally agree with you. Like, those kind of occasions, you know, you kind of want to make a statement and definitely dive into the archives. And I don't, for me, I know a lot of people, if you got 150th anniversary, that means literally going back 150 years and pulling out an old design and making it look like you've gone back in history and brought it to the present day. So that was the thinking behind my way of doing that design. But it's like everything, like you were saying, it's all about making something that will sell. So, and I think it was the first Nike England kit, right?
Yeah.
So they totally just played it safe, because it was a white jersey with a blue round collar, and that was it. And then the 150th anniversary logo looked like the Budweiser logo.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it kind of did look a bit half-assed.
I'm glad you said that, not me. That's good.
No, I don't know whether there were time constraints on it. So, I mean, Nike owned Umbro, and then they decided in the end to take over the contract from Umbro, whereas it had originally been said that Umbro would... It's almost as if, really, they should have kept it with Umbro. There should have been one last Umbro kit, really, for the 150th, and then they were going their separate ways anyway, but it would have been more fitting, I think, maybe for Umbro to have had that honour, maybe as a final goodbye to them.
Definitely.
Whether Nike maybe, just time constraints, maybe when they were taking over the contract, maybe didn't know they were going to take over the contract. In terms of design, from a design point of view, they didn't have the sort of 18 months beforehand that you usually have to start creating the kit. Maybe they needed to get it through quite quickly. So that's why they played it safe and didn't necessarily put the same amount of research and development into it. But yeah, that was a pity. And your design, especially with the crest you used, I think would have been... Yeah, more fitting for the occasion. There's another thing in Volume 3 that has become like an iconic design. And iconic design in sort of the fantasy kit world, which is the Marlborough Monaco kit.
Oh, right, yeah.
Was it original idea from you? Because I've seen it loads of times, and Chris Oakley's done one recently. He did like football kits for all the F1 teams of years gone by. So Marlborough, I don't know what they were. They McLaren or something? Marlborough? I can't remember what they were.
Ferrari.
Okay. So he did one of those. I take it was a Ferrari he did, and it had the Marlborough pack design on it as well. But you see it so often. But when you did it, it was an original design of yours, was it?
Yeah, I did that design when I think it was 2009 on Blogger originally, on my Blogger account, and that actual idea came from when I was about 8 or 9. One of my uncles had the Marlborough pack, and this was when I was well into this. I got into football like relatively late for a kid. I was like 9 or 10. And I was always drawing superhero outfits, and I remember he had this Marlboro cigarette pack, and it just looked like it belonged on a football pitch. The Marlboro sits underneath the red arrow that points upwards, you know, like it would on a chest of a football player, and then it's got the coat of arms or whatever it is that rests there. So I remember drawing that when I must have been 8 or 9, maybe 10. and it was something that when I was at university and started Blogger, that I revisited and redrew it. Because I think the Marlboro identity in the cigarette pack is super iconic. And everybody knows it. It's instantly recognizable. There's a reason why like Ferrari and Marlboro was a perfect partnership. Yeah, so for me, it just felt obvious, but it is pretty amazing how since then I've seen it so many times. So many people have kind of copied it or rehashed it and, you know, built from that idea of using other, you know, that branding and logos and packaging in a similar way to how that design was.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Oakley's on, I think it's probably kitbliss.com, it might be kitbliss.nz, so he's got all kinds of different themes and they're really good. I don't know if the thing is so many times it's been done so many times. I don't know whether it's come along because he decided to do the theme of the Formula One cars, so that was obviously what he was going to do, so it would end up looking the same anyway. But this, like you say, there've been so many people that have done it in the meantime that you don't know where you've seen it before, but everyone seems to have seen it one place or another. When you did it on Blogger, did it get a big reaction on there?
I think so, yeah. I may have even posted it on Design Football as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was posted on there as well, yeah.
Probably have to have a look. But I think it's one of those things, it's a bit hard to like feel like you own that idea or lay claim to it, because everybody is so familiar with that kind of branding and that kind of feel. And we're quite lucky that in the last 10 years or whatever, that with the internet, we've built up these online communities where these amateur designers have been able to upload their designs. So I guess if, I don't know, we first saw it 10 years ago, say if I was the first one to have done it 10 years ago, it probably is because of that, because that was the first time a platform like Design Football had been put up for us to upload our designs. We don't know if we did it 25 years ago, somebody else would have done it.
Have you still got you said you did it when you were like 8 or 9 years old. Have you still got that little drawing somewhere?
I'm not 100% sure, but I'll probably dig around. I've got a hell of a lot of drawings of kit designs that I did when I was a kid.
They definitely need scanning in and putting on Instagram or something like that.
But... Well, I actually did it. Was it last year that I vectored up some of the drawings that I did as a kid and I put them side by side, and that was on Instagram.
Yeah, I saw some of these. So you did an Italy one where it had the flag down the leg or something, was it?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, and a Juventus one sponsored by Donne.
That's excellent. Okay, we're going to need to check those out again because that's brilliant. That was quite... To what extent did you use artistic license when you recreated those? Did you tidy them up a bit, or did you go, that's a bit strong, I'm going to make
those stripes a little bit thinner or anything like that?
Or did you stay true to what the originals were?
I tried to stay true as I could to the actual sketch. I mean, obviously now, I don't know, the drawings that I do are a bit technical now than they were when I was, say, 8 or 9. So I've got to consider how stripes would sit along next to the seam line and stuff like that. But I tried to stay as true as I could.
Yeah. So on to volume 4. So this was really sort of South American themed, wasn't it?
Volume 4, would that be right?
Yeah. Because all the designs that are in that I did while travelling South America.
Ah, okay. So Peru is like the iconic kit. So everyone... What's your favourite football kit? Oh, Peru, because they've got that
red sash. And if you say to someone...
Which one? They don't know. They'll probably say 1970s or something. But they don't, pick a specific Peru kit. And I really like the recent Umbro ones. I think they're fantastic. I think the one that they're going to be wearing at the World Cup is brilliant.
Yeah, they've done a good job recently, Umbros.
Yeah, so all of them are really fantastic. But the one you've got in Volume 4 is just Are you able to describe that one for us? The one you put in volume four. Do you remember it?
Yeah. So the stripe goes over the collar, comes across the chest, and it never breaks. So it wraps itself all the way around the body. So it's almost like it spirals down the torso, round the back like a snake.
Mm.
See, I see it a lot. I go through the website. I go through designforwater.com. That go through the galleries, and there are a lot of shirts I go, yeah, I'd wear that. And this is definitely an example of that. You say the sash goes over the collar. I mean, it's like that. I don't see that very often. I don't know if anyone's ever done that, where a detail from the shirt like transfers onto the collar as well. And that's an idea. I've said that a load of things you do are really obvious.
So I've insulted you regularly during this podcast.
But that doesn't seem obvious to me. That sounds like something you'd go, should I do that? No, because that will look weird. But it works brilliantly.
Really?
I feel like our conversation's becoming like Sherlock Holmes, you know, where Watson always, I don't know, where Sherlock Holmes always gets angry with Watson because Watson always says after he explains how he solved the mystery that it was so simple.
Yeah. That is our relationship now.
I'm not Sherlock Holmes, of course.
No.
Did you? You obviously have just tried something, but it's worked out really well. Why isn't anyone else doing that? Because that's a brilliant. It's a terrible idea
that works brilliantly.
Yeah, that idea it came from. I was in Peru at the time, and I was in a bar. It was like this old man pub/bar. And were Peru last in the World Cup in something like the 70s? Is that what it was? Or like 1982 or something?
Yeah, it's a good... It's well over 30 years ago, I think, yeah.
So they had this picture in the bar that was one of the last times that Peru were in the World Cup.
Mm.
And the shirt was amazing, but like in this picture, but it was a winged collar. So it's like a white collar. And the stripe went, the sash went underneath the collar. And I thought it was a shame because it really disrupted the shirt.
Mm.
So the idea came from looking at that photo and thinking, how amazing would it have been if the sash went over the collar to maintain like the harmony of the jersey and the sash?
Yeah.
So that's where it come from. And when I drew it down, like you say, it probably... is a terrible idea, but when I drew it down, it just worked so well and looked so nice.
Yeah. When you explain it like that, that makes perfect sense because, in effect, the collars were so big, those wing collars at the time, it compromises the main design feature of the shirt. So I don't want to say it's obvious.
But
that's why it works, isn't it? So you remove that element to it. But, like you say... those collars back then were kind of great in their own way as well, so you don't want to remove that feature either.
Yeah, so you could just get rid of the collar completely, and then obviously there's nothing getting in the way of the sash. But
the way you've done it is brilliant. This is definitely one that people should check out. This is a great shirt. And the other thing with it is you put, I don't know if you've ever seen that before, but you put sashes on the socks as well, which is a brilliant idea. And River Plate did that a couple of years ago. Did you know that?
Yeah, and weirdly enough, River Plate did it. I think a couple of months after I designed that, because I went from Peru and I went to a couple of other countries and then ended up in Argentina. And it's when I was in Argentina that River Plate unveiled their new kits. And it was from that season, I think, that they had these sashes on the socks.
Oh, so it was immediately in the aftermath of you actually...
It was almost at exactly the same time.
That must have been strange.
I think River Plate have it on the front of the socks, but I put them on the back of the sock.
Ah, okay. It definitely works. That is one of the greatest fantasy kits that I'll never get to wear ever.
And that... thanks, glad you like it.
The other thing that happens that's in documented in volume four, but as kind of happened obviously earlier than that, and people will probably be aware of before the release of volume four, is that I don't know how to pronounce this, so I apologise. But is it Whipala?
Whipala.
The Whipala controversy. Are you able to explain that as briefly as possible for something so complicated and bizarre?
Yeah, I think I've got quite good at explaining this. It's one of the first things. I went for a job interview and they called it up as well.
Oh, really?
So basically, Bolivia's got this double identity, because if you think about the history of South America, the Spanish went there, they invaded the country or conquered South America, wiped out indigenous populations, yada, yada, yada. So now you've got this divide in South America where it's like a lot of white Spanish descendants and a lot of darker skinned indigenous descendants. It's not as simple as that, but that's for the way of talking. But basically Bolivia has got the biggest indigenous population out of all the countries in South America. So I think it's don't quote me on this, but it's something like 60-40. And forever the white Spanish descendants have ruled the country. And it wasn't until the mid-2000s when they had their first ever indigenous president elected, Evo Morales, and he decided to give the power back to the indigenous populations. He, you know, if you wanted to work in government, you needed to be able to speak one of the indigenous languages. I think there's seven of them. I don't know their names. I think Aymara is one of them. And he also elevated the flag of the indigenous peoples as co-flag of the country.
Yeah.
So the official flag of the country is the green, yellow, or gold, and red, you know, like tricolor. And yeah, the flag of the indigenous is this checkered flag built up of seven different colors. And if you travel the country, you see the two flags flying side by side quite a lot. And you also see, if you're driving through, depending on what cities you go through, that, you know, indigenous, like mainly indigenous people, you see this flag a lot. And it's an amazing flag. It's so unique and like visually striking, because I don't know, you don't really see many flags like that.
No.
And so traveling the country, it's got this real double identity. And I mean, with football kits, you know, you've got the home and the away. And what better way to reflect the double identity of the country than through the home and the away kits? So that I designed the home to be, you know, classic, traditional Bolivia. And then the away, the indigenous colours. So it reflected the colours of the flag, which could never happen under FIFA laws, because, I don't know, how many colours? You can only have four colours on a jersey, yeah. I think.
I think you can only have a few colours. I think they do say something like that. I think it's four colours. But then the obvious other problem is that if you're representing the flag in its normal form anyway, then you get into trouble. You won't be able to do that. So it would have to be like different coloured trim and that kind of thing. They have had problems with it because teams have wanted to do like rainbow flag kits and that kind of thing. So, and they have managed it, but I think it's to do with proportion. So if you have it too much of each of those different colours and it goes over the four, then you start to hit problems.
Yeah. So I did this kit. It was because as I was going around South America, I was designing these kits and uploading them onto my Facebook page. And the plan was collate all of these designs and put them into issue 4 of the magazine. And obviously I was traveling around, so I was designing the kits of, you know, like a week or two after I left the country. So I was in Argentina or Brazil, and I published the kits, because one of my best friends that I stayed with, he's Bolivian, but he's from a mixed background. So I think on his father's side he's got indigenous blood, and on his mum's side is Spanish. So he warned me before. He said that, you know, a lot of people aren't going to like this, but it's good for the country. He was saying that the country has a real issue with accepting its identity because it's got this racist divide. I wasn't totally naive in the design, but I thought that to make a statement, it'd be really interesting. But I didn't expect to wake up one morning and get 250 notifications on my Facebook page. Most of them, like, really angry inboxes from people sending me, like, really nasty stuff. It was quite bad. I was surprised. And then within a week, the Bolivian equivalent of, like, Question Time or something being quizzed on the design. And then the BBC picked up on it and it became like a news story for a day. So that was quite funny. That's that in a nutshell.
Yeah, I remember seeing it and I was like, yeah, I know that guy. That's Amadeus Angelillo there.
Yeah, so it was quite an interesting story. But then it moved on to another level because...
Well, I keep on saying that all these kits
should be real kits, and I'm gutted that they're not real kits. But that became a real kit, didn't it?
Yeah, it was quite sad. I don't know how to describe it, but it was quite funny in a way that one of the things that people kept slinging my way was saying that it's a disgrace to represent the indigenous populations. They're this, like, there was a lot of these kind of messages, and one person was saying these people are thieves. They're like some really bad stuff. And then the next thing I know, that in the first ever edition of the Copa America Indigena, the Bolivian indigenous national team had turned up wearing my kit design without having told me anything.
And it's pretty good. I mean, it's not perfect, and I don't know who made it, and it's dodgy that they did it
without actually maybe
saying, can we do this and maybe pay you or something? But it does look pretty good, doesn't it?
Oh, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, you could tell that they designed the copy because elements of it are exactly the same as my design.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they probably... You know, they've got a fair enough argument. You nicked our flag to put on a football kit anyway. So,
yeah.
So yeah. I can't be too aggrieved.
They're quite good honours. Now,
I mean, I spoke to someone about this the other day. And I said, isn't... Like, someone who knows, a friend of mine who knows all about South America, visits there often and is involved in the, like, interested in the politics and everything. And I said, yeah, isn't there a racist thing or something, or aren't they like the descendants of immigrants are like oppressed in some way, and that's why, like, and she just looked at me like, no, that's probably not the case. So I think it's just, there's just been a shift in the country, hasn't there, that's gone from what way is it, 60-40 in terms of indigenous, is it?
Yeah, so it's 60% indigenous,
yeah,
40%, I don't know what you call them, Spanish descendant.
Yeah, so it's kind of, the tide has turned slightly in the other way after decades or maybe even centuries perhaps in favor of the...
Yeah, I think it's quite a complicated situation, subject, but yeah, they, out of all the countries in South America, that one of the reasons as well is that Bolivia doesn't have a coast, so yeah, it always had like an indigenous majority. And it wasn't until like the mid 2000s when they got their first ever indigenous president, who's a fascinating story in itself, got put into power. Obviously, he made a concerted effort to give the power back to his people. So I guess it was that all of these people that had been oppressed or not had much money or opportunity, all of a sudden it was like a watershed moment. And yeah, and it's amazing because when you go there, like, there's a lot of like art and architectural movements, where these people are like building ridiculously amazing houses and stuff. They call them cholets, where they're building, it's almost like new money kind of thing, where these people have got wealth and they're showing it off by building these ridiculous houses. And they're not even trying to copy. Like, often you'll see like rich people in other countries mimic what they see I don't know, in popular culture, these guys are like building these ridiculous palaces reflecting their own culture, and it's, it has to be seen to be believed because they're spectacular.
Excellent. Okay, well, that's I don't want to say that that's your like 15 minutes of fame, because you kind of do well, your career's going well in design and everything else, but it was certainly a break from the norm, I take it.
Yeah, it kind of feel like a 15 minutes of fame, to be honest. I've never experienced anything like that in my life. That was a bit, to become world news for half a day was quite strange.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In Volume 4 as well, who was it? Was it Soccer Bible who asked you to design a kit from the future?
Yeah, it was for their forthcoming issue at the time. It was based on the future of football.
Okay, so what elements did you put into that?
So basically, it was 2015, and they asked me to design the kit of 10 years time, so 2025. And at the time, Nike released their Nike Turbo Speed suit that they were given to all the top tier athletes for, the Olympics and stuff. And they were pretty amazing. I mean, I've said it before in this chat that we've been having, that I was obsessed with superheroes. And that was like the closest we've come to like seeing someone, a professional athlete decked out looking like Superman. So, so basically I took that cue and kind of ran with it, but tried to add in technological details and stuff that I kind of envisaged, coming in. Kind of like, it was kind of like a spandex outfit with bonded plates on the front and the back, which would house the team colours, player name and numbering, and sponsor logos. Which is definitely the way I think that kits are kind of heading.
Yeah, well, they kind of tried that with Cameroon had that one piece but certainly 2015. So this is around the sort of time when Nike released the Vaporware stuff, the Vapor kits, which were streamlined and like you had the like ergonomic thing, and the when they were twisting there were seams that would stretch slightly to allow the body to twist. So it's very much in that vein, isn't it?
Yeah, and I've always been really like influenced by the 2002 Kappa kit as well, which was super skin tight, made of lycra, would stretch like a mile when someone pulled it.
Yeah, the Kappa combat range. Yeah.
Okay,
so Volume 5, and this is kind of where you, I suppose, your career's coming along at this point as well. So where you are as a person is sort of reflected in what you're doing in the designs as well. Is that right?
Possibly. I mean, it's the first issue that I was able to publish kits that have actually been brought to life.
You mentioned, who was it you designed kits for that actually got made? Was this Le Ballon thing or something?
Yeah, there was a couple. So there's the brand, the Dutch brand Copper. They got me to design. They got commissioned for a newly formed team from the center of Amsterdam, the Pro Leagues, called Torpedo Kattenburg. So they reached out to me to help them design that kit. I worked with a French football collective as well called Le Ballon.
Yeah.
Who run a really successful like football league, like amateur football league made up of designers, DJs, marketeers, and they have like a football league that is sponsored by Nike and Puma, I think, at the time.
Ah, yeah.
So they released a pop-up shop where you could, there'll be a football jersey and there's a vast array of like patches and decals that you can print to make your own shirt. So they asked me to design a couple of the plain kits.
Mm.
And then elsewhere in the magazine, there was the stuff I've been doing with the FIFA video game as well.
That's for a lot of people listening, that's going to be the coolest thing. So everyone obviously plays FIFA, and you're getting to design the kits that go into FIFA.
Yeah. I guess when they approached me, like the 10-year-old me probably was really giddy, like really excited. it was a cool gig. Designing for the Legends team.
how did that come about then? Was this for a contact, or did they just know of your work and they came to you, or how did it happen?
It's all through social media, like Instagram and Twitter. I guess like never before, you can get access to these people and stuff. And I don't know, they just reached out to me through that. I think Instagram is the best way that for me of showcasing my work and what I do. And it's literally through Instagram.
That's a good selling point of Instagram. If you go from uploading some designs to Instagram to designing kits in FIFA, that things are going pretty well. So it's the Legends kits that you do then?
Yeah, which for me was the best thing, because I remember as a kid, so I kind of stopped playing video games after, because I played the same version of Football Manager for 6 years, and then it corrupted and I was devastated. So I stopped playing video games after that. But
Which version was it?
2006.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I got to nearly 2,100 as FC Basel. And then it corrupted. So
That reminds me, FC Basel were like the first kits in Volume 1, aren't they?
Yeah.
Why FC Basel? Were you an FC Basel fan, or was it just because you were playing as them in Championship Manager and you decided to do those?
I'm not sure where. Do you remember, was it like 2003 or 2004 when Basel beat Manchester United in the Champions League, yeah, or drew against Manchester United? And then they played against Middlesbrough in the semi-final. I've no idea why, but I've always, like, I don't know, ever since seeing those games, I've always really, like, followed them and really, really loved them. And when I got this version of Football Manager, I thought, you know what, I'm going to be FC Basel.
Yeah.
But they're like an iconic team because I think they've influenced like the Barcelona design. Barcelona had a chairman or something that was tied with Basel or something.
So, yeah, it's exactly that. Yeah, they shared a chairman, I think.
Oh, really?
Okay. Or the founder of Barcelona was involved in Basel or something like that, and he carried over the identity.
One last thing about Volume 5. Based on some old Kappa bibs that Barcelona had in like the 90s, you created a whole range of bibs. Is that right?
Yeah,
like training bibs.
The one that Dios, what is that? I don't know my art too well, but that's like, is it a Michelangelo painting or something?
Yeah, the Creation of Adam.
Creation of Adam. It's Michelangelo, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I see. I'm not too bad. and this is like, but is that a reference to Maradona as well?
Of course, yeah, the hand of God.
Ah, okay. See, that's probably the greatest football training bib I've ever seen, and there can't be a better one.
That
has to be made at some point. Have you not got that made?
I've been trying, but the brand that I was working with is kind of dragging their heels, because I was hoping for the World Cup to have an exhibition of all of these training bibs.
Yeah.
But it kind of hasn't happened.
That's a shame.
Hopefully in the future it will.
And that's, so I will see that in the flesh.
Hopefully, because I think the training bibs one is an interesting project, because when I saw that Barcelona one from the 90s, I just can't believe that these brands and clubs haven't made a thing of it, because it's such it's the point of it is to really stand out and be really ugly. So that just gives you creative license to go absolutely mental.
Mm.
And well, no one's really done it.
Also not restricted by regulations or anything, are you? When you're in training, you can do whatever you can have whatever you want. So you're not
confined by the regulations.
Football shirts. So the creativity should come out of that. Umbro released some be about 10 years ago now, I suppose. But they released some, and they were like all the like iconic teams. So there was like a Celtic one, just like a big Umbro logo on it, and then it was like green and white hoops or horizontal stripes, and there was an Argentina one, and there was an Ajax one. So all these iconic kits done in a simplified way,
but then with an Umbro logo on them.
Yeah, they were really good. But yeah, I don't know how popular they were.
Yeah, hopefully we start seeing some crazy bibs, because they only have one purpose, and that's to make sure that to separate the people on the bench or on the training pitch to the people that are on the pitch.
Yeah, I suppose. In the Champions League and stuff, there'll be restrictions for them, but you could certainly use them in training,
and it'll be okay. Yeah,
definitely.
Okay. Well, I think there's never any better note to end things on than crazy training bibs.
I think
all conversations should end like that. What is it you're up to now then? Where are you working at the minute?
So a few months back I traded football in, and I work in cycling now. I work for a brand called Rafa, who are a really interesting brand, because they kind of come at the same angle as I was doing with my kit designs anyway. It's very much storytelling led. So it's like delving into the annals of the history books and bringing back forgotten classics and gems and picking out elements and stuff.
Okay, and are we going to get another volume of this then, a volume 6?
Yeah, it's in the works. I was hoping to get out for the summer, but I've been way too busy. But it's going to be mainly focused on women's kits, because I've been able to work on some women's kits in the last couple of years, but I really want to push that a bit more now.
That would be excellent. Yeah. That's flexing your creative muscle in a different direction. Perfect.
Yeah, because there's been some great women's kits, so hopefully we can start adding to them.
So just quickly, you've looked at the World Cup kits. Are there any favourites that you have in there? Anything that's caught your eye?
The Nigeria one, right? It has to be.
I had actually not guessed that, but yeah. I think I'm going to ask people on this podcast what their favourite kit is, and I think that's going to come up a lot, because it is fantastic.
I think they've managed to merge like retro classics with the streetwear trend that's going on right now, and they've just nailed it. Mm. Even the off-pitch stuff is just so good.
Oh yeah, I'm like of an age and of a size where I shouldn't, but
I really want the there's a pair of
like tracksuit bottoms. I don't know what they call them now, track pants or something,
that have got like they're like black with,
or very dark green with like green leaves all over them. I really want
those. I don't think I can get away with that.
I think that stuff's going to be pretty hard to pull off, but
yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
That's like a red rag to a bull. I'm definitely buying them now.
Okay. Well, Angelo, this has been really good. It's been great talking to you. How can people get hold of you? You mentioned Instagram. What's your name on Instagram?
It's not Amadeus Angelillo, although no. I probably should have been. I picked another stupid handle for that. So it's ANGT34.
And is that the same on Twitter?
Yeah, exactly the same on Twitter.
Same on Twitter, okay.
Yeah, I know you from Twitter, but Instagram, we need to get into Instagram.
Okay,
you need to get on it.
people need to be following you on Instagram, don't they, really? If this is, if all this stuff is, I mean, if EA Sports have contacted you, then we need to be following you on Instagram.
Well, definitely. There's no excuse if EA Sports. No, I think, yeah, I'll definitely encourage people to use Instagram. I think it's the best way to you know, get your work out there, and there's so many creatives on there, and there's quite a strong network, and it's a great way to show off your work, and it's the modern designer's portfolio, I guess. So
okay,
I mean, it's where I post everything I do, so
okay, well, that's reason enough then. All right, well, thanks so much for that.
We'll
speak to you again soon.
If you want to follow me on, I'm not on Instagram.
If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm J29ers.
Design Football is the Twitter handle. Designfootball.com on Facebook, and obviously the website designfootball.com. Visit there. Lots of new designs on there. A lot of international designs being uploaded at the minute for obvious reasons with the World Cup coming up. So people should visit the website as well, and maybe we'll get an Instagram account at some point, but we'll see on that. But thank you again, Angelo.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem. It was an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much, and we'll be back with another episode very soon. Thanks a lot. Bye bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.